two eyes to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit until we get our share. Say it loud.
KBLA. Say it loud. Talk 1580. Time for our daily deep dive. Joining us now, attorney Nana Jamfi. She's a radio host in her own right. She's an attorney and educator and abolitionist, co-founder of Justice Warriors for Black Lives and the Black Alliance for Just Immigration. Good morning, attorney Nana Jamfi.
Good morning. Good morning. Always great to be here.
Got that James Brown going just for you.
Thank you. You know I was nodding.
Oh, my goodness. So much going on. Some of it we've talked a little about with Dr. Gerald Horn. But let's start with BAJI, Black Alliance for Just Immigration. Explain again what it is and what you're working on right now, because underneath so many of these issues, especially COVID-19, there is shifting and policy changing and all kinds of creeping attitudes based on other things that impact Black immigration.
Absolutely. So the Black Alliance for Just Immigration is the largest Black-led immigrant rights and racial justice organization in the country. Started in 2006. We're celebrating our sweet 15, I guess. And we advocate, we educate, we organize on behalf of Black migrants, which include people who just got here and folks like me whose parents came and were born here. But we also work with African Americans to fight for racial, social, and economic justice, understanding that much of what we experience in this country in terms of Blackness, we experience together. So we, because of that, we do different types of work. Some of it is the typical work on immigration, but most of it is that work that's happening right at the intersection of being Black and being migrant. So we do work on policing and abolition work, trying to get rid of these cops in cages, both in the criminal sanction system and in the immigration detention deportation system. When you talk about COVID, when we look at who was impacted the most, we know, of course, that Black people were very disproportionately impacted by COVID in all the ways. And that includes Black migrants, whether you're talking about job loss, whether you're talking about healthcare workers who were impacted, whether you're talking about people being impacted by housing, unable to pay rent, et cetera. You're talking about Black folks, as Black migrants as well. And so right now we're fighting to get Black folks in, you know, at the border. We're fighting to get Black migrants able to vote, who are eligible to vote, you know, and also being suppressed along with other Black folks. Any front that Black people are fighting for on, Black migrants are fighting there, and BAJI is there.
And since you mentioned fighting to get people in at the border, talk to me about Haiti. Everyone was all up in arms around those pictures of the border agents whipping the Haitian immigrants, and that was all in the conversation. And it seems like five news cycles ago now, but those families and individuals are still suffering. Where are we with that?
So this is still the Trump era policy basically continuing, which is so disappointing. You know, not disappointing because you know me, Dominique, I'm never disappointed by what the U.S. government does in terms of shocked, you know, but it's still painful. When we saw what happened at Del Rio, 60% of the folks there were Haitian, 40% of the Black folks that were there were not Haitian. So they came from the continent of Africa, most of them, but some also from other Caribbean nations. And they really, the government cleared it out. Like, they actually took a bulldozer after they removed all the people and tilled over the land to even clear out any DNA evidence that anything had happened there. People were forced back, detained. And when they detain you, it's not like they just put you on a plane. You're handcuffed, shackled at the legs, shackled, you know, at your hands, around the waist, all of that tied to each other, and then put on a plane and forced to fly that way.
Wow, that's
crazy.
Some
of the people who were deported were Haitian and some were not Haitian. But so far, there's been 80 88 flights that have gone out since September 19th to Haiti alone.
Wow, that's incredible. And again, almost no coverage beyond that initial news cycle. But what's the justification for shackling people? Because I saw those pictures of folks on the planes and people deplaning in Haiti. And I mean, why shackle people like slaves?
Because this is what the sanction system does. I mean, when, again, the immigration detention deportation system is based upon the criminal sanction system. And so, you know, if you ask them, if you ask the administration, they'll say, well, people don't want to leave. And so we've got to contain people in order to keep them from taking over the plane, or in order to keep them from, you know, starting to fight with the immigration officials and cops that are taking them back. For us, you know, the question is, why do they have to go back? Right now, the justification is based on nothing but Title 42, which basically Trump made up to say, oh, because, you know, because of COVID, people can't come in the border, but they can fly in, they can come in on a Carnival cruise, they just can't come across the border. And President Biden named that and talked about how racist that was and how that needed to be changed in March of 2020, February, you know, when he was running. But now has adopted the policy himself with no further justification.
Mm. Yeah, I've been disappointed, and unlike you, I do get disappointed in Democrats that make me promises and then don't deliver. I've been disappointed with how far to the right the Biden administration has been when it comes to immigration and some other policies on the international stage, policies like their actions in Cuba and the like. We'll talk about those as we come forward. We are speaking with attorney Nana Jamfi, KBLA, Talk 1580.
We know you have options, but thank you.
Thank you
for making the best choice. The only station in LA of the people, by the people, for the people. We are unapologetically progressive. KBLA Talk 1580. Stay tuned. Thanks for waking up with Dominique DePrima on KBLA Talk 1580.
We are talking with attorney Nana Jamfi. She is a civil rights attorney. She is an activist. And she's with BAJI, Black Alliance for Just Immigration. She's leading that organization now, along with having been a founder of Justice Warriors for Black Lives. See, you are also an abolitionist, and I feel like the conversation about abolition, meaning the abolishing police agencies and prisons, has really come under fire given the current crime wave that we have, from, you know, homicides in being up in every city and rural area across the country, to the gun violence that we see, like the mass shooting in Michigan. I feel like police agencies are using this as an excuse to raise their budgets, and also blaming the Movement for Black Lives and saying the defunding of police, which incidentally never really happened, is to blame for these incidents. Sheriff's Department in Los Angeles, just one example of what's going on locally, saying, well, we can't curtail our overtime anymore. We need more money because crime is up. And even some progressives and folks on the left saying, well, we need police because, and you know, I'm not an abolitionist, but I'm a radical reformist, not even a reform, reimaginist. But some folks are saying, look, we need police. We've got crime up. And how does abolition, how does the abolition movement respond to that conversation, not just on the right, but also on the left?
You know, it's very interesting. There are billions of dollars being poured into policing right now. As you pointed out, the defunding of police has not happened. I ask people all the time, where have the police been, you know, where are police operating right now in a defunded state? Most of what occurred, even in those places where people, you know, were like, victory, we've been able to, you know, get the police to not have this money here. The money came out in the wash in some other space or some other place, or in the form of overtime, or, you know. So when I look at what's happening across the country, where most police departments are actually getting more money than they were getting before. And I see that at the same time, these police institutions with these bloated budgets, in some cases 51% of the general budgets of cities, again, rural and urban and in between, it's like you've put all this money in and your crime wave is going up. And you're saying, well, what we need to do is to put more money into that. I think that's what they call putting more, you know, money into bad, putting money down.
Throwing good money after bad. Money. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Throwing good money after bad. You know, sometimes I forget that I grew up in this country. Throwing good money after bad. Right. It's like, this is not how it works. If you pay an attorney and that attorney continually fails to accomplish the goals that you're looking for, and someone turns to you and say, well, you know what's going to work? Give them more money, Dominique. You would be like, no, what's going to work is to fire this fool. That's what's going to work. And to try to see what the alternative is, because this right here is not working. And so that's what abolition at its core is requiring. It's saying, look, you're throwing good money after bad. You're paying for something. You're not getting the result. And so even if you can't get with our conversation in terms of the morality, the respect for human dignity, the respect for human rights, the understanding that if we don't put dogs in cages, why are we putting human beings in cages? The knowledge that you cannot make good prisons that are fabulous. If we can't get with that, let's get with the fact that in spite of all the money going into these police, that crime is up. And we're talking about people who already don't solve most crimes. We know that in most places, the police solve rate is 10% or less. And if you tell these people they have to take a COVID test to wear a mask, they want to walk off the job. They don't want to work anymore. This is who we're talking about continuing to support. It's foolishness as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, on that point, I was shocked when I saw how many crimes go unsolved because, you know, I watch too much TV, and in Law and Order, they solve every case, but not in real life. And the thing that's crazy, like, aside the 10% figure that you're citing of solved crimes, if you go into black homicides, the numbers are even lower.
It's like 2% or something.
Yes. If you are a white person and you're killed, you're much more likely, more than 10 times more likely to have your crime solved than if you're black and you're murdered. The odds of it being solved are tiny.
Tiny. And let me tell you what's not happening. And people know this commonly. Your car gets broken into. Do they bring out CSI? Are they fingerprinting? But no, they are not.
Yeah.
Moreover, you know, when we're talking about safety, the role of the police is not to keep people safe. This is what people, you know, the misunderstanding people have. If, in fact, that was the case, you'd have a cop in front of every door. They investigate crimes that have already been committed. And again, we've talked about their, you know, solving rate, the rate at which they solve those crimes. But they investigate crimes that have been already committed. How are we stopping crimes from being committed? And that's where abolitionists put, you know, the majority of our energy in terms of the reimagining. What do we do to make it so that folks are not going into the homes of 81 and murdering 81-year-old women because they're trying to steal stuff from their house? How do we deal with this before the crime, not supporting and putting all this money into the folks that are going to investigate that crime?
Well, I mean, two things about that. Number one, Attorney Nana Jamfi, police advocates will say, well, we patrol, we have a police presence. You look at Beverly Hills where they decided they wanted to deal with quality of life crimes. They created a whole task force, was basically just arresting black people for being black people. But that is supposed to be a deterrent, not just solving already existing crimes.
And yet the crime rate is going up. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yep, well,
okay,
it's
so,
not.
And
what
so part
doing is shaking down black people,
right,
and brown folks. You're doing a great job at that. But in terms of actually, again, addressing the issues, putting funds into those issues, $8 million a day, I think someone says, we pay for LAPD. every day, $8 million. Girl, if you and I sat down, we know what to do with $8 million and to address, the conditions that cause people to harm people.
I mean, I think that's a great point. With $8 million, what you or I could do in one neighborhood in South LA would be pretty significant in terms of increasing public safety. And we know that. We can prove that as the director of a program called Summer of Success, where we saw Baldwin Village, a.k.a. the Jungles, go down to zero murders for two summers. When we did that, we know that we can do that. Anyway, but
$8 million a day? You didn't have $8 million a day.
No, we didn't have $8 million a summer. We didn't have $8 million a whole summer. But again, what people say is there is crime. Who do I call when, my 81-year-old loved one is murdered? Who do I call when I'm raped? Who do I call when I'm threatened with rape? We need every... And you and I have had this conversation off the air. Every society has had some force that is tasked with justice and safety. That warrior energy that's about protecting the greater good. It has to exist on some level in society, doesn't it?
Absolutely. In terms of the energy of justice. The energy of fairness, the energy of accountability, the energy, all of that. We have to have systems within which that happens. The question is whether that system needs to be a system that is rooted in dehumanization. That's really what you're talking about with a carceral system. We do not, when we go and we unearth, the ruins that we do have, throughout the continent, for example, but even in other places, right? I'm not just going to focus on Black cultures. Even in other places, we do not unearth the 1,000-bed prisons or the 100-bed prisons or the 10-bed prisons. And that doesn't mean that people were so perfect then, like people try to act like, oh, because they didn't kill, they didn't rob, they didn't rape. No.
We know that's wrong.
All of that was happening. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, and some of our ancient systems, the divine themselves are robbing and raping and stealing. Okay, sit up and act like human beings are not doing that. Okay? So we have that understanding. But the response was not a carceral response. There is some pieces that, as abolitionists, we talk about and think about in terms of how far, if you're going to have a system based upon shared values, everyone doesn't share the same values. How do we work through those pieces? And, I'm not going to lie and pretend that people have come up with all the answers, but people with much deeper work and abolition than I have done, who have written books, who have done the studies, who have are actually practicing this in other places across the country, not in the just on a neighborhood scale, but beyond a neighborhood scale, show us that it can be done. And that, that where your energy, where your focus goes, energy flows, that's what grows. I'm messing up all the sayings today, Dominique.
Well, we get the idea.
We haven't, we're not planning for it. We're not trying for it. And therefore, it doesn't happen. It's like when they had the dads that went into that school and people, I'm old enough to have seen that happen again and again and again, where you have concerned parents, concerned grandparents, you got the big mamas, you got the uncle papas that go to the school and not patrol, but actually interact with the students. And all of a sudden, people are not fighting with each other anymore.
I think that's true, especially when the black dads show up.
Yeah, we see that, it's celebrated, and then that's it. We move on. That becomes some pilot program over somewhere instead of getting the focus that it should get as, these folks that got guns and everything else are getting.
But at the same time, here in L.A. and Valencia High School, there was a brawl that breaks out at a basketball game, where the kids start fighting and then the parents jump in and they start fighting. It feels like we're in a time, and I talked about this at the beginning of the show, in the post-45 era where people don't have sense, they don't have manners, they don't have respect. And then at the same time, you've got this pandemic mental health crisis, which I feel like people are constantly underestimating and not accounting for. And you've got, what do you do when the parents and the kids and everybody's just brawling out? don't you call the police? Like, who do you call?
Give me $8 million a day. I'll organize it for you. Give me $8 million a day, and I will solve that problem. You know, and not just me. I'll sit down with the crew. We'll sit down with the team of folks that are imagining something different, because there's a bunch of different energies that are involved, including what you're talking about in terms of just pandemic mental health. You know, why are people being ruder? Why are folks feeling like they can just come and yell in your face? The police are not the solution to that. That's how we end up with the Karens calling the police on everything that comes up. They're not, the police are not the answer to that. We got to be able to have the time, the funds, the resources to develop the answers to those things, again, that don't dehumanize people. Because you and I have both seen what happens when people aren't handcuffed. Just the handcuffing alone is so painful. You know, it's so like, dag, you're doing that to a person. Things that we don't, we're trying to free Shamu the whale from San Diego Zoo. Mm-hmm. And yet we are locking up human beings in that. And you know, it's, we got to deal with it. We got to square up with it instead of hiding and running from it. We got to square up with it.
Let's go to Randy calling us from Watts. Hi, Randy. Randy?
You know, everything that you see. Hi, how are we doing there this morning, lady?
Good, good. Welcome.
Beautiful conversation, but all is not well. I mean, it sounds really good, but the reality of us as a people is not in the best interest. You cannot protect yourself in California. You can't do that. And then you got the opportunists out here know that you can't protect yourself, and they take advantage of you.
I know that's what I'm about to say. You're talking about gun control, because I know that
Gun control, it don't have to be a gun. You can take him out with a spear. You can use a crossbow on it. A compound bow.
I'm not good with a crossbow, but I get your point.
Compound 40-pound is pretty good. Go right through you.
I mean, but it sounds like you're advocating a particular solution.
The solution is the predators realize they have no problem doing what they want to do because nobody's going to stand up to them.
And by nobody,
you're
talking about the police, you're talking about the people, you're talking about who do you want to stand up to them?
You need to stand up to yourself, and you can't protect yourself.
All right, well, we're up against news and traffic, and I can tell, quite a detailed conversation. You want to make a quick comment here, Attorney Jomfey, and then we'll address it on the other side of news and traffic?
Yeah, what I will say is that when people feel, again, that they have to defend themselves, it's yet another sign that the police are not trusted to be able to handle this problem. And more reason that we should not be bothering with them, putting our $8 million a day towards something else.
Talking with Attorney Nana Jomfey, she is over Black Alliance for Just Immigration. You can find her on Twitter. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and all those places. KBLA 1580, KBLA 1580. Please like, follow, subscribe. Yes, we are on YouTube also. Your love helps keep us here and keeps us relevant. I'm Dominique DePrima for First Things First on KBLA Talk 1580.
More of First Things First with Dominique DePrima when we come forward. KBLA Talk 1580. Unapologetically progressive radio. Black owned and operated from the heart of Leimert Park, USA. From the heart of Leimert Park, USA. We're listening, and the convo continues right now. Right now.
Facts. I'm Dominique DePrima. This is First Things First. Talking with Attorney Nana Jomfey. The organization she leads is Black Alliance for Just Immigration. She's a civil rights attorney. Randy from Watts called. He is an advocate of actually looser gun laws, more access to guns. I'm an advocate for the Second Amendment, but I actually think the assault weapons ban is sensible. I think the universal background checks are sensible. And I think this culture of violence and glorification of solving all of our problems on the world stage, personally, and on a municipal level through violence is part of the problem. Not just the actual guns, but the mentality. And Randy, you were making the point, you said people can't defend themselves in California. Well, people in Texas have guns and they still have crime. In fact, I would argue it's even worse. More people getting shot, more people getting killed. A good guy with a gun is not always the answer. I think it's deeper than that. I wanted to let you finish making your point and then have Attorney Nana Gianfi respond.
Well, the reality of our roster and weapons requirement in California is been unheard of since prior 1968, when we had could see open carry in California, and these crimes did not exist. I've been around the block for a while. We used to have open carry here, and we did not have the problem prior to situations that come about with the 1967-668 gun legislation. But even right now, you have to for you to protect yourself, the roster for certain weapons that you can have. And then you got a situation where you got people showing up with ghost guns, like we had the conversation the other day. It puts you at a disadvantage. So the average person is living in fear. Are they moved out of the community?
I don't live in fear, but I understand what you're saying, Randy. So since we're nearing the end of the show today, give me your bottom line. What's your solution?
The bottom line is that we have to have common sense as to you being able to protect your life. And it's not existing. The police department has never been there. It's always after the fact something's happened. They showed up. I live in South Central. Yeah, and so you get a shooting go down, and then somebody return fire, and you tell them they sit back and watch people bleed out in the street before they go in there.
I mean, and I know that's the truth. I would add, though, just for thought purposes, and I think it's important, California has a 5% lower violent crime rate than Texas. Texas has very free gun laws, but yet they have 5% higher rate of violent crime. Attorney Nana Gianfi, your response to Randy's bottom line.
So I think that we have a culture problem that makes what Randy, what you're proposing difficult, and particularly in this day and age. I mean, we cannot compare 2021 and what's happened. We've got a alleged war on black folks in the form of the war on drugs. We have all kinds of things that have happened now in this past time period where it's hard to just flip the switch and say, okay, if only we give people the capacity for everyone to have a gun in whatever way they want to protect themselves, that's going to solve the problem. We just ain't in 1968 or 1969. And things are a lot different, number one, including the culture of respect for ourselves. And I don't mean that in a respectability way. I mean the respecting the humanity in ourselves that we had in our communities, that I think because of all of the things that we talked about earlier, and Dominique, you raised how it's gotten even worse now. The capacity for us to dehumanize each other, to look at each other and talk about each other as predators, as thugs, as ne'er-do-wells, as monsters, as beasts, all of that language is not the language that we were using to describe ourselves, even those folks who were committing violence or stealing, et cetera, in our communities before. There has been a cultural shift in which we see ourselves not as, a human being, fellow black folks or folks in the neighborhood, et cetera, and really are seeing ourselves with the language and with the view of this law and order perspective. And so I think right now what you would end up having is people getting upset with people because they're parking in front of their house, and they're mad that they're parking in front of their house because they do it every day, and they keep telling them they shouldn't do it, and somehow that turns into a shootout.
Yeah, I want to push back a little bit, Attorney Nana Gianfi, because I'm not a hell in a handbasket. I'm not team hell in a handbasket. I don't think things are getting worse and worse and worse. I don't think we hate each other and ourselves more and more and more. I do think that we're in a post-pandemic period, and that to be in denial about that is problematic because there are solutions that need to be implemented. I do think we're under the influence of he who shall not be named, and there's a lack of civility across society, not just in amongst black and brown people, across society. In fact, I would argue it's more among white people than others. That is, that needs to be healed from. And I do think that what you're describing as far as seeing ourselves through other people's eyes, in particular a law and order lens, to me, that's been going on for a long, long time. So decolonizing the mind and these movements of self-care, these movements of anti-racism, movement for black lives, to me, those are helping us in the way we see ourselves and each other, and hopefully will soon span across the generation gap. That's where I see the hope.
Well, no, I agree with that. And I'm not saying that we suddenly don't like each other more than we did before. I'm talking about this characterization, right? The Chris Rock, I love black people, but I hate N-words.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about that. How suddenly it's like you're able to see these people in a different light. It's like, this is, you know, this is your kid. These are our relatives. This is not some strange something that got thrown in from through the sky. Right? And so having that understanding from that perspective, I think, is important.
Yeah. I mean, we could even make that argument when it comes to black immigrants. I mean, I remember telling a lady one day who was very mad at me for taking a pro-immigrant stance, you know, you might be blocking your own future husband from coming across the border. I mean, right? We talk about DNA, that connection is also there globally.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of my friends posted something about having to block someone who is mad about Insecure because it's a race, not black, and this one on the show's not black, and that one's on the show's not black. She's like, I just can't take this foolishness any further. But, you know, we've got to think about what we're talking about here, because Shirley Chisholm, by these people's definition, is not black. Malcolm X is half black, a hey black person. Kwame Ture was not black. Marcus Garvey was not black.
Who made you the black police? Isn't that a form of cultural imperialism that you as a black American or any American think you are the decider of blackness for the entire globe?
I mean, Audre Lorde is not black. Rihanna is not black. I don't know what to say. You know what I'm saying?
Forget about Obama. I mean, it's like many of those folks will say they're black when it's convenient for them to be black, but they're not black when it's convenient for their argument for them not to be black. Kamala Harris is black on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and, you know, Tuesday, Friday, she's not black.
Right. So the first black president is not really the first black president. I mean, at some point, we understand that, yes, there's different understandings that people have of what blackness is in the United States. Just like if you're African-American in the United States and you go to France, you are going to now be experiencing what it means to be black in France. It's going to be something that it doesn't look exactly like it looks in the United States. You would find it foolish if the Senegalese person or the person from Tunisia, that's been there, looks at you and says, well, you're not black because you haven't been through my experience. Like, what are you talking about? This experience of blackness is global because the experience of white supremacy is global. Mm. That's where, you know, so this doesn't make sense to have these types of delineations. What we have is misunderstandings. What we have is people not on the same page about what things mean, lack of knowledge about people's histories, et cetera, and that we can resolve. But we need to push back this desire to be exceptional, that American exceptionalism that easily moves into everything else. And as a black migrant who was born here, I know that. Remember when born in the USA, you know?
Hold that thought. Attorney Nana Jamfi is our guest. We're going to talk about COVID, blackness, and the national stage, international stage, as we come forward. KBLA Talk 1580.
She's reclaiming her time on KBLA Talk 1580. More First Things First with Dominic DePrima when we come forward. Broadcasting live from Lombard Park, USA. Welcome back to your home for unapologetically progressive radio, KBLA Talk 1580.
Okay, now I'm going to pretend like I'm on my old show and rush everybody. Attorney Nana Jamfi is my guest. Look, I had two questions that I was asked for you that I promised I would ask. So will you put on your lawyer hat for a moment? Carl from LA wanted to know about the concept of judicial discretion as it related to the case of Kyle Rittenhouse. And Jamal wanted to know if Rittenhouse could be charged on a federal level and if that was likely to happen.
So judicial discretion is what allows judges to make decisions that are reasonable. And it's not that easy to overturn those decisions that the judge makes. But they're appealable. The judge made a decision. You can go take it on appeal. But when the Court of Appeal is looking down at what happened, unless you can show that it was really egregious and just, something that's darn near unheard of, it's going to be hard to get that overturned. With respect to Rittenhouse and the federal charges, I've been thinking about that myself. And, it's difficult because the people who were killed and the person who was injured are white. So it's like hate crime probably isn't possible. And then, with what federal law does it fall into? Now, they may charge him for having the weapon, but in terms of killing folks, I don't know that there's a federal space there for that to happen.
Honestly, it doesn't seem like the will is there either. The guy's got this huge war chest. He's been canonized by the right. I just don't see the will.
Oh, no. And if you look in terms of like the president's comments, which he tried to clean up, but it didn't do a great job. It doesn't seem like there's an outrage that is, what it should be in terms of what happened. So, yeah, I don't think the will is there on any part of any of the political spectrum at this point.
Yeah, I think there's a simmering rage in our community. But to your point, I feel like Biden was trying to stop people from getting out in the streets, which is why he said that dumb thing. But as far as the general public, like the kind of outpouring like we saw last summer, no, that doesn't seem to be there.
Yeah, again, I think there's a lot of reasons for that, and I don't think it's just because people think this was all just fine, but we know that the feds, I don't think it's that, but we know that the feds tend to respond a little faster when there is that outpouring in the street, and so, I just don't see something pushing out of that. I don't.
Continue. We'll have just a few minutes before we pass the mic to Tavis Smile. I want to find out about how we can help Baji and what Baji's up to. But quickly here, got about a minute. The COVID mitigation measures worldwide, the recent controversy around South Africa and this new variant, is that impacting Black immigration in a way that's problematic?
Yeah, it is. When they do these bans, first of all, I already talked about the border and how the COVID pandemic is being used in that way. And we've been pushing to try to get Title 42 ended. And of course, we're sure they're going to use this new thing, this new variant as a reason to try to keep it there. And so you have those, tens of thousands of Black people and other folks languishing at the border again for this made up reason. I think when we're talking about our folks that are traveling in other parts of the world, again, there's been this shutdown that is going to prevent people who really need to get out of the country to go to their families. Because when they do a ban, understand, when you have family, that doesn't mean you get to say, I have family, so let me go. No, that's it. You're there. You're stuck until that ban is lifted. And so it does impact Black migrants in really negative ways. And, it almost makes you feel like, folks in Africa, as we're trying to keep up to save our own lives and do this research into variants, maybe we don't share this information with people, which sounds terrible, but I'm like, You share information and people ban you. And, a point was made that folks are all upset about the fact that supposedly China didn't share the information, but their response, when you have these type of responses, it doesn't make people want to share information.
No doubt. As we come forward, we'll find out what the Black Alliance for Just Immigration is up to push back on these problems and how we can help. It's KBLA Talk 1580.
Build Black better. Better. Tweet it. Tell it. LA finally has a Black-owned talk radio station. And it's unapologetically progressive. KBLA Talk 1580. The conversation continues right now with Dominique DePrima on First Things First.
KBLA Talk 1580. We've been talking with attorney Nana Jamfi. She is one of our premier civil rights attorneys, and she is over the organization Baji. You should follow them on Twitter. It's BAJI on Twitter, at BAJI. They are accepting donations still for Giving Tuesday. For those of us who are late on everything, you could choose to give to Baji. What else is going on with Black Alliance for Just Immigration, and how can we help?
So right now, you know, we're joining in the swinging that Black folks are doing generally in this country on the issues that folks are most concerned about, and on some issues people might not be thinking about, but they're about to be concerned about, including issues relating to what's going to be happening in 2022, what's going on with voting, how are we getting our folks to make sure that they get to these polls and put people in that are going to push forward on the agendas, the items that we want to push forward on. In the state of California, there's a lot that has been moving with respect to abolition, making sure that we're decarcerating, getting people out of jail, getting people out of prisons, making sure that people can be with their loved ones. And Baji is working on those. When it comes to health care and housing, we're looking at how we're moving an even greater wave to make sure that our folks are not just put out. I mean, Black people are getting smaller and smaller and smaller in terms of the population in Los Angeles and in cities across the country. And, you know, one out of every five Black people in Los Angeles County is a Black migrant. And so we're not a insignificant population here locally, and making sure that our, you know, Black folks, citizen or otherwise, are not being put into the street and are not being forced to leave. So there's a lot of areas that we're doing work on. We're, you know, please feel free to reach out to us. You can contact us by going to our website at baji.org. You can also follow us at InstaBaji. You can follow us on Twitter at BajiTweet.
Got to leave it there. Nana Jamfi, thank you so much. History is now. We are making it together. Davis Smiley next. News next. Until tomorrow, one love.
KBLA 1580 Santa Monica.